Welcome to the Stoke It Up podcast, everybody, a podcast encouraging you in your journey with God. I'm Alan Stoddard, and I'm your host, and I am here this week with Daryl Dash. He is the pastor of Liberty Grace Church in, and I can never remember the name of the place, Daryl. What is it?
Toronto.
Oh, that's right, Toronto. But it's called something else. It's called Liberty Village. Liberty Village. Pastor at Liberty Grace Church in Liberty Village in Toronto, Canada. Very unique. And so I wanted to get Daryl on the podcast this week to talk about moving from a traditional church situation into church planting. Now, I've followed Daryl for almost 20 years or so, something like that, maybe 15. And we were doctoral students together with the legend, Dr. Haddon Robinson, if any of you guys know his name. If you don't, you need to. But I wanted to get Daryl on here to talk about church planting because I'm in a season of learning about it, and I know he has been there. And it's good to learn from people who have been there and made mistakes and gotten things right. So, Daryl, thanks for coming on the Stoke It Up podcast, my brother.
Man, it is so good to see you, Alan. And I can't believe it's been 15, 20 years. That's really hard to believe.
I know.
But you're right. You know, I was doing the math.
I remember reading. I looked up your, you used to have your doctoral thesis on your dissertation on the web. And I remember looking at it. I skimmed it a few times. I read certain portions on theocentric preaching. And I really liked that. We need more of that in the body of Christ. But Daryl, I want to ask you about church planting today. And tell us about how you went from Richview. Is it Richview Baptist Church?
That's right. Richview Baptist Church, also in Toronto, not too far from here.
Okay. So you became a church planter from a traditional church in the same city.
Yeah. Basically what happened was we were a suburban church, a kind of an inner suburban church. And, you know, I was there 13 years and I kind of knew that my ministry was coming to an end there, but I honestly thought I was going to be a seminary teacher. And I had an offer all lined up. I was just waiting for it to come. And I did a crazy thing about 2 or 3 years before I started planting. I just noticed downtown Toronto was growing like crazy and new condos, cranes all over the place, people moving in. And I began to pray because I realized we didn't have many churches in our denomination, or I looked around even other denominations. There were very few Bible-believing, gospel-preaching churches in downtown Toronto. And so I began praying, you know, the Luke 10:2 prayer that God would raise up workers for the harvest. You know, the harvest is plentiful. Pray to the Lord of the harvest that he would raise up workers. Now, and I knew it would never be me. I was in my 40s. I was very comfortable. I thought I was going to a seminary. And I just knew, like, I didn't have what it took. So I was... I felt fairly safe praying that God would raise up church planters to go. But you know the Luke 10 story. Jesus tells him to pray. And this is my imagination, right? I picture Jesus leading him this prayer and then saying amen and then looking up. And this is my imagination. I picture Jesus saying, guys, look, God's answered prayer. Like, you're here. And I kind of felt like that too, that God after a while was saying to me, like, okay, like, you could be the answer to your own prayer. Like, what about you? So yeah, that began the process of just thinking like, man, maybe this is something I should consider. So I tried to get out of it. I took a church planting assessment and I kind of figured that they would come back to me and say, hey, nice try, Daryl, but not a chance. But I passed and then it was just like, man, I think God is calling us to do it. I talked to my wife. And it really came down to the fact that fear would be the only reason not to do it. And to take a passage a little bit out of context, I really was starting to feel like the servant who buried his talent. And, you know, I pictured one day saying to the Lord, Lord, I wanted to play it safe, right? I knew you're a severe God, a severe master. I didn't want to take a chance, but that was really the only reason. I didn't want to be doing that one day. So that's kind of what got us into church planting.
Wow. How long were you at Ridgeview?
13 years. And it was a, I would say probably it was a hard 13 years, just a church in transition. So 13 years, but it kind of felt probably for them and for me a bit longer than that.
And had you been a pastor before Ridgeview?
I had actually, and I think my first church, I pastored two traditional churches before church planting. And the original church was really an older church, but it had all the feel of a church plant, like kind of small and a little bit scrappy. And so I think that kind of prepared me for church planting later on.
As you thought to transition from Ridgeview to Liberty Grace, what were the emotions that were going through your mind, your wife Char's mind and heart, and then the church? Was it a difficult transition?
It was a very difficult transition. You know, our kids had been in that church pretty well their entire childhood. So, you know, our kids were, my son was 14, so, and my daughter was 18. So really for most of their life, they had been at that church. We were leaving a lot of relationships. I would say the two feelings that I had were relief and terror. So the relief part, Alan, to be honest, we were really hurt leaving the church. You know, I think we were, it was a tough ministry and I made a lot of mistakes there. And I would say God moved, but it wasn't easy ever. So there was a real sense of, you know, my wife had been hurt and we were just leaving with a lot of wounds and feeling like, I remember we looked at other traditional churches and just thought, I don't think we're ready for that. So, which is kind of crazy because we needed recovery time and we jumped right into church planting, which, you know, if you're recovering, I don't know if it's the smartest thing to do, but we did it anyway. So relief, but also terror. So the idea of planting, and we did a parachute model of plant. So we knew nobody in the community. We had no church that was kind of our mother church. We just moved into the community, just me and my kids. And within the first year, one of my kids bailed. So our church plant went from 4 to 3. And we just said, man, like, we had our local denomination behind us, but that was more just like a little bit of money and a lot of moral support. But we were on our own. So we really felt scared and realized we were just aware that we were hurting, but this could fail, but we were just going to go for it anyway.
I love that. I need to hear that myself because we are in a similar boat. What was the church planting network? Was it Acts 29?
No, we were with our local denomination, which is a Canadian Baptist denomination, the Fellowship Baptists in Canada. We were looking at Acts 29, actually, but right when we planted, that was when Acts 29, one of the times when Acts 29 was in the news for all the wrong reasons. And we just pictured, we're in a very liberal, progressive part of town. And at the time, the head of Acts 29 was saying some things that were, you know, if anybody Googled him in our progressive area, it would be really bad. So we're with them now. We joined them eventually. But at the beginning, we just decided to stick to our local denomination.
Okay, nice. Awesome. So you went through an assessment. Was that humbling, having been a pastor already?
You know, it was scary because it felt like we were putting ourselves on the line. I think the thing that saved me was that I kind of wanted to fail, if you know what I mean. I was looking for an excuse to not take the risk of church planting. So, yeah, it was a little bit scary. It felt like, I know, especially my wife, she said, if I have to fill out a million different surveys and assessments and personality things, it was kind of like, I just don't want to do that. But it was scary, but I think it helped kind of wanting to fail. So the stakes were pretty low and we wouldn't have felt bad if we'd failed.
Right. Do you think you've got to get to the place to where you're willing to fail in church planting to go forward?
Absolutely. I think that church planting is a risky endeavor. And I think you can do all the right things and still fail. And I remember the first year we planted, one of my buddies interviewed me for a blog, not for a podcast, but he said, Daryl, what if you fail? And I remember having to face that, like we could fail. So a couple of stories. I talked to my wife one day before we planted, and I remember where we were going for a walk. And I said, what if it's harder than we think it's going to be. And she said, I'm in. I said, what if it's more expensive than we thought it's going to be? And I went through the whole list, right? What if we fail? And at the end of it, she said, I'm in. And we kept going back to that. Like every time it got hard, we're like, remember we had that conversation? The other story, a friend of mine, I don't recommend doing this. A friend of mine, a year into church planting, he came to me. He's a church planter in downtown Toronto. He planted very successfully. And he came to me and he said, Daryl, nobody can plant a church in Liberty Village. We were a year into it already. So it was like, man, thanks for telling me that. Like you could have told me that a year and a half ago, not right now. And even worse, he turned to me and he said, you can't plant a church in Liberty Village. So it was almost like saying, like, even if it were possible, you're not the guy to do it. So man, the odds were stacked against us. And we even had friends challenging us that it couldn't be done. The thing that I'll add to that, Alan, and we might get into it a bit later, is I really believe in the first year of planting, I've just seen a lot of church planters go through crisis. And we did too. A friend of mine told me, actually a church planting director, he said, you're going to go through more spiritual attack in 1 year of church planting than in 10 years of traditional pastoral ministry. And I remember writing that down, kind of thinking, oh, that makes sense. Like you're taking new ground. Of course, you're going to be attacked. But I kind of filed it away in the notebook. But that first year of planting, we actually went through more, like we went through so much spiritual attack. So at the end of the year, we were just barely like, I remember saying to Shar, like, I knew it would be hard. I didn't think it would be so hard that there would be days like getting out of bed and tying your shoes would be a major victory. Like it was brutally hard. So failure was a very real possibility.
What were the hardest aspects?
So here's my theory. Satan kind of likes us comfortable. And when we step out and go on mission, he knows exactly where to attack. So he knows where our weaknesses are. In the case of our family, he knew that there were some weaknesses in our family. Our kids were at a very vulnerable age. And so the first year of planting, our daughter went through a number of different crises. And then our son went through a period of crisis. So basically it was attacking our kids. And that was hard because most parents would say, like, come after me. Like, you know, by the way, like, I'm not blaming it all on Satan. Like, I'm not saying that it was all him. There were certainly other elements of it. But here's what I believe. Satan knows where we're weak. So he knows where the vulnerabilities are. He knows exactly what screws to turn to get at us. And in our case, he knew that there are some weaknesses or vulnerabilities that our kids were facing. And he just went at them. And like most parents were like, man, come after me, leave my kids alone. So it really became like the first year we were just crying out to God for help. Now God moved. Looking back, I'm just going to make my wife sound good because she is. At the end of the first year, she said to me, what if the way that we're planting in pain, we're not planting in victory, we're planting basically limping. What if that's not a distraction from how God wants us to plant the church? What if this is actually part of God's design in terms of how we plant the church? And of course, right away, echoes of Paul's thorn in the flesh and, you know, my grace is sufficient for you. You know, he's getting all the glory. I can't take any credit for it. So it was so biblical, right? Second Corinthians came alive for me, like Paul talking about being burdened in chapter one and despairing of life itself. Man, if Paul could feel like that, why should I expect that I wouldn't feel like that? So that really helped me to say, okay, like this is hard, but God's in this. God can work even through the hard stuff to bring glory to himself.
I love that. Daryl, if I were to ask you for our listeners and for all of our reminder and just equipping and edification, how do I ask this? Failure, is it really failure? Or do we have the wrong metric?
Yeah. I think the only failure is ultimately disobedience. So we can't control the results, right? We are not in control of, I think of the parable that Jesus told of the farmer that sowed seed. And I love how Jesus put it, like the farmer went to sleep at night, the seed grew. The farmer didn't know how the seed grew. And the seed growing is God's role. our role is simply to go out there and do the work. So if there's a crop failure, that's not a failure. I think that's just like, man, we were faithful. Alan, I've been so encouraged reading the stories of missionaries in, I just have been collecting the missionaries, for instance, that go to Korea and preach for years and years and years and come back feeling like they were dismal failures. And then later on hearing stories of maybe even after they died, the seeds that were planted years later took root and grew, and word comes back maybe to their kids that there's churches there now thriving because they were faithful. So yeah, I just believe, like, I don't know what failure is. I think failure is going to be, you know, revealed one day. Paul again in Corinthians says, I don't even judge myself, right? It's God's job to judge me. I think one day we're going to discover God did a lot through our, in our case, like, we planted a church. It's never been huge. It's never been even like that big, but we're in a very transient area. People come and go. Our area is less than 1% churched. So we're like basically an unreached area. And it's really hard when people move every 2 years. So we look at it. And the other week I was talking to somebody in Seattle and a church of about 1,000 people. And so we were talking and he said to me, you know, we're a church of 40, 50. And he said to me, Daryl, you guys are way ahead of where we are. Like, we're in Seattle. We're progressive and secular. You guys are even like 10 years ahead of us. Never get distracted by the numbers. Never get discouraged by the numbers. You're kind of the research and development department of the church, trying to figure out how to reach people in a very secular, transient area. We need you to keep doing what you're doing. So that was a good reminder. I think God keeps bringing encouragements like that into my life. Whenever I get discouraged, it's like, no, God's at work. I can't really measure the results. That's up to God. But he gives us enough to be encouraged, but not enough to be proud.
That's awesome. Everybody, I'm here with Daryl Dash. He's the pastor at Liberty Grace Church in Toronto, Canada. And I'll put the website in the show notes. It's libertygrace.ca. But we're talking about church planting. We're talking about what we might want to give our lives to as far as reaching people. Of course, we're not saying this is the only calling and way and manner of doing the Great Commission, but we want to be a part, some of us, of church planting. And if you're listening and you're not a pastor or that type, maybe you're called to just go join and help a church plant in this season. It's not easy. And we're planting here in Granbury, Texas. And I just thought of my brother and I thought, I have got to ask him questions. Now, Daryl, tell us about the locations that you've been in Liberty Village. And what is Liberty Village like? Maybe we start with that. And then what was your story as far as your progression of where you, how hard it was to find a place to worship and gather? And how did all that go down? What's Liberty Grace like? And what was the story?
So Liberty Village is...
Liberty Village.
Yeah, no, that's great. Liberty Village is so close to the center of downtown Toronto. So about 15, 20 years ago, it was all factory. And it's been gentrified. So they tore down all the old factories and they just threw up a ton of condos. So it went from being a community with like maybe 100 people living here in old abandoned factories to being a community, instant community of, you know, about 10 to 15,000 people. And if you go about a mile out, that increases to hundreds of thousands of people. But our immediate community, it really is a village in the center of the city. I would say it's all young professionals, people in their late 20s, early 30s, mostly single, some couples, very few children, a ton of dogs. And so it's just a very transient community, like more dogs than kids. It's just one of those funky areas. People move here, I think, for 2 years, 1 or 2 years. They live in a tiny condo of 400 square feet or 600 square feet. And they move here basically to be close to downtown and to party. So that's kind of the people that we're reaching. You know, there's bars, there's everything you need. You never need to leave the community here. You've got like everything you need. So, yeah. And finding a place in this area, because we're in a brand new community, there's no existing churches we can meet in. There's no schools that are in the area. So really we're on our own looking for a meeting space, right? The traditional places, schools and churches are not available to us. So originally we met in a dance studio And then we met in, we got our own space eventually. And that was kind of cool, but we only had it month to month. So it was like, anytime we planned something, it's like, I don't know, like in next month, we might not even be here. And eventually during COVID, we got rid of that space because it was costing us a fortune and we couldn't meet. And we met, I don't know how many places we met in, like a yoga studio. By the way, it was a hot yoga studio. So we would show up in July and it would be over 100 Fahrenheit and no air conditioning. So it was like, it was brutal. Wow. We met in a park, and eventually about a year and a half ago, we got our own space finally. And this is a 5-year lease. It is so expensive, but it's just hard to find space in our area.
Wow. Yeah. I like that space. If I ever get to Toronto, I want to come. I'm watching online. So Liberty Grace Church, Liberty Village, how do you do evangelism there? If you were going to ask that, how do you connect with people? What's the bridge? What's the connector?
So two things we try to do. One is just simply to build relationships, which, I mean, it sounds so basic, but we really believe in this area. If you begin with, you know, now God can work anyway, right? God could just lead you to have an evangelistic conversation right off the bat. But what we find generally is that you've just got to build relationships with unbelievers, ask a lot of questions, look for connection points, ask good questions, and look for opportunities to share the gospel. So, you know, for instance, one thing I'm excited about, we're in the middle of buying an ice cream bike. And I live in the community, so a lot of what I do is simply just to get to know people in the gym or the building. But we're buying an ice cream bike, and we're just going to go out in the community and hand out free ice cream. And on the bike, it's going to say Liberty Grace Church. We're kind of expecting about 5 or 10% of the people, 90% will just take the ice cream and run. But 10% of the people will say, huh, a church. And then out of the 10%, maybe 5% of the total people will say, I have questions about God. And we're just looking for that 5% to begin to engage with them. The other thing I've noticed, Ellen, is there's not really a lot of interest in God in this area. What's interesting is people believe in God. They believe in a God or spiritual reality. I've met a few atheists, but most people, if you talk to them, they actually believe that there's something out there, but they're not interested. So one time we went in the community with video gear and just said, if you had a question for God, what would you ask him? And two things surprised me. One, nobody challenged the premise. Nobody was like, what do you mean God? Everyone accepted that there was a God, but nobody had a question for him. And what we discovered is people just, they accept there's a spiritual reality, but they just, it's so irrelevant to them that they don't even think about it. So what we find is people have to be hurting to begin to think about God. So we're looking for the people who wander into church one day and just say, like, I'm just getting divorced. I have answers, or I've just got a bad health diagnosis. Like, all of a sudden I got questions. It almost takes a crisis for people to begin to think about the big questions of life in our community.
So as people from Liberty Village come to Liberty Grace, what does that look like? Is it, who are the people in the church? Are they people that have come from the village? Do you have some folks who are transplants that drive from outside? What does that look like?
We have two kinds of people. One would be people who move into the community and they're already Christian and they're looking for a church to join. And the other group of people we have are just people who've wandered in the door one day and said, what's this all about? I've got questions. Most people, we have very little parking. We've got two parking spots. So we're not really geared for, and it's a nightmare to drive around here. So we're not really geared for commuters. It's like all summer long, there's events and it's almost impossible to get here. We do have a few people who moved away that used to live in the community and they keep coming back, but pretty much it's people who walk to church. It's really people in the immediate community that come out.
What is your partnership, let's say, with any Bible colleges or seminaries? Do you get any leadership from those places?
No, we did for a while. Like in our denomination, I was part of the leadership in church planting. And so we would assess people, and once in a while we'd find somebody. So we had somebody for 2 years that I assessed, and we said, would you consider coming to Liberty Village? And he was from a denomination in our area, but I think it's going to change. The seminary is just starting a church planting diploma, but up until now, there really hasn't been that many people. Alan, Toronto's scary for people. It's expensive. It's one of the most expensive cities to live in certainly Canada, other than Vancouver. It's one of the most expensive. And yeah, people are scared to move to the city. So far it's been hard to find people to come here.
Yeah, right on. Well, if you were going to give encouragement to someone going into the ministry or someone in a traditional church situation that's thinking about church planting, what would you tell them?
I would tell them two things. First, count the cost. It's going to be way harder than you expected. And I think you just got to know that going in. And the other thing I would say is it's worth it. It has been more than worth it. So although there's a cost, I'm so glad I did it. I can't believe the privilege of, you know, going into an area and seeing lives change, of seeing like God just has answered prayer so many times. So it's almost like following Christ, right? I just tell people it's going to be harder than you think, and it's going to be so worth it. Church planting has been the hardest thing we've done in ministry. In some ways, I think all ministry is hard, but in a lot of ways, it's pushed us to the extreme of, you know, facing our idols and really depending on God, trusting Him to move. But the flip side of that is we've seen God answer so many prayers, and I just can't believe the privilege that we've had in church planting. So yeah, I feel like the most blessed guy alive. Like I just love my wife. I love this neighborhood. I love the ministry. I just can't imagine not having done this. So I would just tell anybody who, if you feel God calling you to do this, really take it seriously. And you're not going to regret it. If God's called you to do this, you're really not going to regret it.
When I watched you go to Liberty Village, I was kind of living vicariously through you. I was still in New Mexico and at a traditional church. How long have you been at Liberty Grace?
We have been there. Oh, we're coming up to our 10th anniversary this September.
Okay. I was still at First Baptist Church, Ruidoso, New Mexico. And I was just watching and I could tell how much you in social media, I could tell how much you cared for Liberty Village. It became very obvious to me. I was like, man, this is great to go in and just, as you called it, parachute in and love a people and just go for it. And I love seeing you and hearing you, the joy of the Lord into your life and the ministry these days, that if you're going to do anything while we can, in a culture that's not as persecuted as other parts of the world, we ought to have joy in the ministry. I think that's a great, great deal. I was going to ask you about the role of social media and connecting in a post-COVID church plant like you're serving. What role do you see social media and digital things in the ministry now?
Yeah, I think that social media is a really good front door for people. So we're just discovering anybody that comes that isn't a believer, even if they are a believer, they're going to have checked out our website and social. They're going to kind of get a flavor for what we're like. And even personally, I know that I have a lot of friends online in the community. And, you know, for yesterday, for instance, I posted something really stupid. And I was posting how I went through an afternoon slump. And I put on some Bruce Springsteen just to pick me up. And it really helped me. And
as I was
posting it and going, this is the stupidest post to post. Like, who cares about me listening to Bruce Springsteen while I'm working? And yet, whenever I do that, I'm amazed. I think it's just people, I don't know. It's not like I'm preaching at them. There's a connection point for people in the community just to see, oh, this guy's just a regular guy, right? And so, yeah, I think it's just good to, you know, use it as a tool. I wouldn't put too much effort into it, honestly. Like, I think the more organic or natural it is, the more salesy it is, I think the more people are turned off. I think the more it's simply just a window into your life and into the ministry of the church, the more I think people relate to it. So I've kind of struggled. I think when I've struggled the most has been when I've been trying to be something or project a certain personality. I think when it's worked the best, it's just sort of like, okay, here's a window. Here's what's going on. Like, I hope it connects, you know, but if it doesn't, this is just who we are.
Yeah, that's dynamite. Daryl, before we end the podcast, I'm going to put some connecting information for people. And is your dissertation still at Dash House anywhere?
It is, yes. I think if you search it, and if you can't find it, then you can definitely send me an email. I'd be happy to send it to you.
Yeah, I will go on there and I will provide a link to that. Tell us about the books you've published in the last few years, and I'll put links for that in the show notes also.
Yeah, it's been really fun. So part of our ministry at Liberty Grace Church is figuring out how do we grow people who really have not been discipled. And that began a process. I've written two books really for our people, but they've since been published by Moody. The first is called How to Grow, and it's really about how to spiritually grow, and not just spiritually, but in every area of your life as a believer, including physically, you know, emotionally, the whole thing. And out of that, actually, the first book that I wrote, but second that was published, was a book about habits and just helping our people develop habits like scripture reading and prayer and going to church, that kind of thing. And it's called 8 Habits for Growth. And it was really written for our people, but I've been getting really good feedback as other people have been using it too. So How to Grow and 8 Habits for Growth are the two books.
All right. I'll put links to those in the show notes, everybody. And if you are interested, go ahead and jump in there and get those books. Those kind of books are always good to just kind of kindle afresh the gift of God that is in us. Thank you, Daryl Dash, for coming on to the podcast today and sharing part of your story. We could keep going on this. I'm fascinated by it, but we want to encourage other people in their journey with God. Know that we will be praying for Liberty Grace Church and the impact that you guys have there in Liberty Village. And anything sitting there on your mind and heart that you want to say before we stop?
No, I think I would just encourage any listeners who are wondering if God is using them, you have no idea the impact of your life until you get to heaven. So I just want to encourage, especially those who are maybe feeling discouraged or ministry and life hasn't turned out like they thought. Man, God is using you. I'm sure of it. And I can't wait to see one day all the stuff we didn't realize God was doing in our ordinary lives.
Yeah, amen. Well, guys, thanks for tuning into the podcast this week. We'll be back next week, of course. We want to encourage you to continue to share the gospel and to engage in the Great Commission of Christ. Remember that your life counts. It's not a beta version. And be encouraged in the things of the Lord. God bless, and we will see you next week.